Hello everyone, Damon Hopkins here from Broadstone. I head up our DC and Workplace Savings team, and today I'm joined by Rachel Coles, who's a workplace engagement consultant in my team, talking about financial well-being and in particular, what a painful budget might mean for us all from the 30th of October onwards. So Rachel, we've got a new government with effect from July. We've been told ad nauseum, I think we're all sick of hearing it, about a £22 billion black hole in our finances that needs to be addressed. And we know that the first step in addressing it is going to be what is described as a very painful budget on the 30th of October. What might we see come the 30th of October?
Yeah, good question. So I think there's been some really wide speculation about what's to come. Some might even say there's been some wild speculation. So lots of theories being thrown around. Fortunately, the Prime Minister, Keir Starmer, he's reassured the public that income tax, national insurance, VAT, they won't increase. So there's some good news. Unfortunately, the same can't be said then for stamp duty, capital gains tax, inheritance tax, and importantly for us at Broadstone, the pension tax relief. So we know with this black hole that the government are looking for some revenue raising measures. You know, they're going to need to get some cash quite quickly, and when they've ruled out taxes on workers, it means that then pensions and pensioners are really under the microscope here. So obviously there's been lots of intense debate in the last few weeks about the means testing of winter fuel payments, so we know that the government mean business, but it's hard for us to know at this stage just how far the government is likely to go.
Yeah, as you say, pensions is always a hot potato, given the proportion of the population that it affects. Equally, from a tax relief perspective and from a cost perspective, it's a big ticket item, and I think, as you say, is always under the microscope. So let's assume we're going to get some sort of change on pensions. What do you think that could look like?
Yeah, and again, of course, all of this is speculation, but you know, the industry is certainly put lots of predictions out there. There's lots of people thinking about this at the moment. One of the big things is this change to tax relief. So at the moment, basic rate taxpayers will pay will have 20% tax relief on their contributions. High rate taxpayers 40%, and whether or not we might see in the future a kind of a standalone rate, say 30%, we that's certainly something that's doing the rounds in terms of a rumor. Is this one likely? Any changes would be unlikely to be implemented quickly, so we don't know with that one. We'll have to wait and see. And certainly again something that's been talked about quite a lot is the change to inheritance tax on pension savings. So 2015 rules came along and they were fairly generous, really, so that a death before the age of 75 results in virtually no tax on DC or defined contribution pension withdrawals. So could there be a change there? Could be a reversal. We will wait and see. And then finally, really, the other big one on the table is a potential reduction in tax-free cash. So in the UK, we obviously have access to 25% of our pension funds and DC pensions as tax-free cash. Could this change? Could we see some changes in this area? Chances are it would likely result in lots of complaints. It might even result in decreasing confidence in pensions. So we'll have to wait and see on that one. In terms of pensions, though, I think they are going to be a big feature of the budget, and it certainly creates a need for education, I think, to help people understand what these changes or any potential changes might mean for them.
Yeah, and I agree with you. I think pensions tax relief, or the rate that we receive pension tax relief on, could very much be under the microscope. It's been a long-standing consideration for even under the Tory government that might change, because there is significant cost to the current tax relief structure. But I agree with you. I think the infrastructure changes at HMRC, at pension providers and administrators would be significant. And I wonder practically whether that's even possible by April. But as you say, you know, we'll have to wait and see, and drastic times may mean drastic measures.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a lot of change, Rachel, and potentially quite daunting for all of us. But just playing devil's advocate, if I'm an employer, I'm sitting there hearing that, you know, there's a lot to come and a lot that might change, but those things are out of my control. So, you know, how can I help my employees with all of that?
Yeah, I think this is an interesting question, and potentially the answer today might have been quite different to an answer kind of 10 years ago, because certainly there's been a change in society. The dial has shifted quite a bit in terms of how much of personal finance should remain in personal households or remain with individuals, and how much actually it is the place now for employers to meet the needs of their employees when it comes to financial well-being and kind of financial education. So there's certainly been some big changes. I think people will be looking for support during these times. And I think it's important really for employers to lead from the front, to bring a sense of calm. I think ignoring this cry for help, if it comes, when it comes from employees, should be avoided if possible. And I think the good news is there's certainly been a rise in businesses who are keen to be paternalistic in their nature, in their values. And again, you know, I think in terms of employers, what's in it for them is that actually, you know, there is kind of a need really for them to appeal to employees and kind of hold on to the employees that they've got. So as I said, I think increasingly employers are going to need to lead from the front on this one.
Yeah, I agree. So we're talking about this much widely used term of financial well-being. I think it could mean lots of different things to different people. Practically in your day-to-day job, when you're talking to loads of people from all walks mm-hmm. of life with different challenges, what's financial well-being in a few words?
So in a nutshell, really, I think financial well-being is just about the ability to manage your money and your resources responsibly. So what, you know, that's kind of in a wider sense. If we looked at the US Consumer Protection Bureau, they talk about these four pillars of financial well-being. I think that's a great place to start. So thinking about making sure you've got control over your day-to-day finances, you know, making sure you're budgeting, making sure you're aware of your ingoings and outgoings. Importantly as well, having some financial protection, some resilience for those bumps in the road. Again, making sure you've got enough to have a bit of freedom. You know, nobody goes to work just to pay the bill. So making sure you've got enough to go on those holidays, you know, make sure you go out for dinner, go out on nights out when you'd like to. And then importantly, save for the future. So whether that be buying a home, whether that be saving for your retirement, and all of that kind of financial well-being, all of those pillars really lean in very well to the other aspects of health and well-being. So, you know, if you have poor finances, if you are stressed about your finances, that's likely to have a wider impact on your emotional health, your mental health, social health, and physical as well. So that would be what I would say financial well-being means, and practically what it might mean for an individual.
Yeah, and I think your point around it being an aspect of one's overall well-being is really important, because if you really think about what it means to keep people productively in work, happy at work, happy in their lives, they've got to have all of those things. They've got to have financial well-being, physical well-being, emotional well-being, etc. So I would always suggest that if an employer is tackling this issue, it's in the context of broader well-being, because there's no point in ensuring everybody's got lots of money. We all know that it's not the source to all happiness, but if you've got loads of money and you're in poor physical health, well, that just creates a different, you know, different type of anxiety and worry. So mm-hmm. I think that's a point really well made. If I could just again just sort of hone in on you know, playing devil's advocate and being an employer,
mm-hmm.
I think it's fairly clear to see why financial well-being is important and why, you know, it's important in the broader context of well-being. But again, what's in it for an employer, ensuring that, you know, everybody is well, healthy and productive?
I think, as I said, it's nice. It's nice to have a good financial wellbeing program. I think we can see that there would be benefits for employees. I think you're right, though. I think there's always, you know, for employers, we always have, you know, they're facing challenging times as well. So we have to make sure that if you're spending on in financial wellbeing or wider employee benefits, that there is some return on investment, that there is something that drives that from a business need. And we, you know, one of the main things you could look at is actually days lost. So in terms of average days lost to health conditions, the British Safety Council did a study last year, and they do kind of regular studies on this. And they saw that last year, 18 million days were lost to mental health conditions. So clearly that would have a big impact on the workplace. And so reducing absenteeism would be a big focus, I think, you know, in terms of employers, if they're going to provide this, that might be a big driver for that. I think even the employees that are attending work and that are in work on a daily basis, you know, if they're stressed about their finances, how are they performing? You know, so boosting employer performance will be, of course, that will be important as well. And again, increasingly, you know, there is this competition. Now, employers are really having to be careful to make sure that they are acquiring the right staff and the right, you know, putting the right people in the right places and the right roles. And also about retaining the staff that they have. So there's quite a big driver there from an employer in terms of why they might want to help employees navigate a painful budget and, you know, making sure that that strategic planning takes place. Hopefully that would reap rewards, as we said, when it comes to productivity, job satisfaction and loyalty from their employees.
Excellent. So I'm going to keep my employer hat on. I'm sold. On why I need to do it. How do I do it? Practically, what could we do to support our people's financial wellbeing?
Yeah, I mean, there's a really wide range of things that can be done. Some of them will be just kind of small one-off actions. Some of them might be kind of in a part of a wider strategic planning. But I think importantly, number one would always be to communicate clearly. So getting ahead of the game is really important, being proactive. You know, not everybody follows the news closely. So, you know, we live and breathe this stuff, but not everybody does. And this budget, as well as other things that crop up throughout the year, is a really good opportunity to provide reliable and engaging financial education that really kind of cuts through the noise. You know, there's so many different ways that you can take news in these days. So making sure you've got kind of a really clear education program, it would be excellent. So making clear what the changes are, illustrating the impact to individuals, and really importantly, highlighting any action that employees need to take. So that would be the main one. That would be the big one. But as well as that, really important to think about the benefits that you already have in place. So most workplaces now will have things like employee assistance programs that are designed to help employees cope with change. So could be a good time to review your employee benefits offering or remind employees about the support that's already available. Again, identifying the most critical needs is important. So not everybody will be anxious and stressed. Not everybody will be affected by the budget cuts in the same way. So it's important to see your workforce as not just one body of people, but as groups of individuals. And so that might mean that you need to find out more information about them and the groups and the needs that they have. And that could be done via something like a wellbeing survey. It could be by listening to employee forums. So really identifying those needs is an important step. Making sure your people feel heard is important. And that way you're going to avoid any unnecessary spending on employee benefits or wellbeing strategies that don't quite hit the mark. And then lastly, but certainly not least, is making sure any solution that you have is visible. This is really important because I think lots of employers have a good mix of benefits. Maybe they have some financial wellbeing programs already in place, but do your employees know where to find it? And how easy is the access? What's the ease of access to that? Now, financial wellbeing platforms can be a great way, increasingly popular way, to streamline this kind of sometimes overwhelming volume of information. So making sure, you know, you use technology to implement those kind of holistic wellbeing strategies that are in place can be a really crucial tool.
Yeah, that's some really good practical examples of what we could do. Thanks, Rachel. Just to pick up on the third point you made about mm-hmm. being targeted and thoughtful about what you do. I mean, in your experience, to what extent are employers actually in touch and understand the challenges that their employees are facing?
Yeah, this is a difficult one, I think, because I think there's always going to be a slight disconnect between what employers think about their well-being, financial well-being of their workforce, and you know, what practically is happening on the ground. Part of that is because, you know, these sorts of things are often shrouded in secrecy. You know, some people don't like to talk to other people about their finances. I mean, there was a recent survey that said that 48% of people were happy to talk to their employer about money worries. So of course that leaves a big group of people who aren't happy. So that can be an issue. But even then, I think even when employees are happy to talk to their employer, what this study showed was actually there was a bit of a disconnect in terms of 29% of employees in the survey said that their employer didn't provide any financial support or any form of financial support. Now, interestingly, when the HR professionals were responding to the survey, none of the professionals said that was the case. So there is a bit of a gap there between maybe what employers are offering and what employees understand of the offering or understand how they can access that. So there could well be a bit of a problem of communication there. There could be a bit of a problem of strategy. And I think that the thing that employers have to tackle with is that the situation is changing all the time, and employers need to keep finding different ways of evolving.
Yeah, and I guess both those challenges come back to the two of the key points that you provided around practical steps, that, you know, making sure that whatever you do is targeted so that it's effective, but also making sure that it's visible so that people know about it and can use it. So yeah, I think those comes back quite nicely to those four key steps that we think are a useful starting point in an effective wellbeing and financial wellbeing strategy. Rachel, that's been very insightful. Thanks very much for that. Hopefully our listeners have found a bit of sense and a bit of purpose in what we've had to say, and some good tips on how we can challenge what no doubt will be some choppy waters over the next few months and years. Thanks again, Rachel.
Okay, thank you.